KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
At 8 o'clock, we have sunny skies and 56 degrees in Atlantic. Looking for to be clear to partly cloudy today, a high of 77. Good morning, I'm Rick Henson with KJAN News. In area news, Page County Sheriff Lyle Palmer reported on Friday that one person was taken to the hospital in Clarinda following a motorcycle accident which occurred on Monday afternoon. 61-year-old Deborah Snyder of Shenandoah suffered non-incapacitating injuries when the 2000 Suzuki Savage she was driving went out of control on a curve as she was traveling south on M Avenue in Page County. The cycle entered the south ditch and tipped over, causing $500 damage. The accident happened at around 2:45 p.m. and there were no citations issued. Sheriff Palmer also reported there were no injuries following two separate vehicle versus deer accidents early Friday morning. At around 3 a.m., a car driven by 20-year-old Dakota Kirkpatrick of Bedford sustained $3,500 damage after the man swerved to avoid hitting a deer. The 2003 Kia Spectra went out of control and slid sideways into a ditch, crossed a washout, and came to rest against the south embankment. Kirkpatrick tried to drive out of the ditch but ended up getting stuck. The accident happened about 2 miles north of the Iowa-Missouri line on Highway 2. The other accident happened at around 6:30 a.m. Friday when a 2007 Toyota driven by 52-year-old Randy Lay of Council Bluffs hit a deer on Highway 2. His vehicle sustained $5,000 damage. The Cass County Board of Supervisors next week are expected to act on signing a letter of intent to join with other counties in a 28E agreement for mental health services as regionalization is required. The move will come during their regular meeting at 9 a.m. Wednesday. Governor Terry Branstad signed legislation last week in Waterloo that reforms the state's mental health system. It shakes up the current county-based format in favor of one that's based on regions. Cass County Mental Health Coordinator Teresa Canning told the Board of Supervisors during the meeting this past Thursday that the Department of Human Services will not dictate to the various county boards of supervisors on how to set up their 28E agreements, but there will be boilerplate documents available on how those boards may wish to proceed. Canning said during a recent meeting she attended, the topic of transition funding was discussed as pertains to the new state mandate.
They talked a lot about the transition funding, and they have identified a source of $20 million to put into the transition funding. In the information that we have, counties that are going to need transition funding for that first year, counties that are going to need that funding for the coming fiscal year have to have their paperwork in order and have applied for that money in October. And then when they go back into session in January, the $20 million supposedly is sitting there waiting to be put into play.
The funds are available to those counties which do not have enough money from property taxes to help pay for the costs of transition. Canning says right now she doesn't think Cass County will qualify for any of those funds unless something happens that would change the situation.
I think that we're going to be okay within the funds that we're going to have coming in unless there's a big, huge surprise that I don't know about.
Supporters of the bill say it equalizes the quality of mental health care across Iowa, and one of the changes is that the state will pick up the county's share of Medicaid costs. Some county officials in Iowa say that in order to pay for Medicaid, though, the state will take back a large chunk of their funding. That's funding for work programs for the intellectually disabled that they depend on. A Monona County resident is hitting the road on a trip across the state of Iowa for her grandson. Tammy Moore of Ute is beginning her trip across Iowa today called Trottin' for Taylor to raise awareness and funding for Batten disease. Moore's grandson, Taylor Lee Moore, has Batten disease, which is a rare neurological degenerative disease. It comes in four forms, and it's fatal in every case. The form Taylor has the late infantile form, and there is no cure. Taylor is 8 years old and is bedridden, blind, cannot walk or talk, and his limbs are contracted. The condition forces him to use a feeding tube. The trip by his grandmother Tammy will begin in Muscatine today and will end in Missouri Valley on June the 18th at the Missouri River. The entire trip from one end of Iowa to the other will be done on horseback. Tammy welcomes others to join her at any point on the ride. Now, she plans to stay overnight in several places, including stops in Messina, Atlantic, Avoca, and BB Town. Donations can be made to Tammy Moore, her last name is M-O-H-R, at 42883 270th Street in Ute, Iowa, 51060. You can find that on our website under the same story on KJAN.com. Any donations will be delivered to the University of Iowa Batten Research. And you can follow Tammy's journey on Facebook by searching for Trottin' for Taylor. An official at the Cass County Memorial Hospital says the Cass County Health System will host a community open house on Sunday, June the 10th from 1 until 5 p.m. here in Atlantic. The open house will showcase the completion of Phase 1 of the CCHS addition and renovation project. Guests should enter via the main north entrance. CCMH CEO Pat Markham said they're excited to share the progress that's been made since ground was broken 14 months ago on the new addition to the hospital. Markham says the improvements in facilities and equipment are amazing and will enable them to continue providing outstanding care for their patients. The main emphasis of Phase 1 is a two-story, 42,250-square-foot addition, mostly to the southeast of the existing hospital. The main floor of the new area includes the emergency department and admissions, same-day surgery, and surgery department. All of the areas have been designed to maximize patient privacy and security while accommodating the latest in medical technology. The second floor of the addition houses inpatient services, which includes obstetrics, medical, surgical, and intensive care units. Another major improvement in the new addition will be the updated air conditioning handling systems, which will allow more comfortable, consistent temperatures in patients' rooms. Work was also done on the Atlantic Medical Center during Phase 1, with the expansion of a Suite C to create a separate obstetrics and gynecology area, and the remodeling of some existing space to create Suite D with six additional family medicine exam rooms. And the CCMH atrium area has been redecorated thanks to a $140,000 donation from the CCMH Auxiliary. The auxiliary funds were also used to purchase new flat-screen televisions for patient rooms and waiting areas in the new addition. The Atlantic Medical Center addition and remodeling was completed last fall and has been in use since that time. The hospital areas will move into the new addition shortly after the open house on June the 10th. The main floor departments will move the weekend of June the 15th, with the second floor departments moving the weekend of June 29th. Immediately following the move, work will begin on Phase 2 of the addition and renovation project, and that includes the remodeling of an existing 22,000 square feet, primarily to be used for improved outpatient services. Well, swimmer's itch is starting to make its presence known to swimmers at Carter Lake near Council Bluffs. The good news is that the parasitic little pest that causes welts and itching only lasts a few weeks and is not life-threatening. The condition is caused by flatworms, which are a parasite. The flatworm eggs are transferred to water by bird droppings. The eggs hatch and infect snails, from which the free swimming form, a form of the flatworm larvae, emerges. In the absence of a suitable host, such as a bird, the parasite will attempt to penetrate the skin of humans and quickly dies after that, causing an allergic reaction below the skin, resulting in welts and itching. Officials say the symptoms are not life-threatening and generally will disappear within a few days. An antihistamine, along with a calamine lotion, can be used to treat the affected areas. Swimmer's itch is most prevalent along beaches that are pounded by waves. Officials say the most prevalent measure is to reduce the amount of time you spend in the water and to quickly dry off when getting out of the lake. For more information on swimmer's itch, you can go to the CDC's website at www.cdc.gov/parasites/swimmer's-itch. The second week of testing the water at state beaches by the Iowa Department of Natural Resources shows no problem with high bacteria levels. Beach Monitoring Program Coordinator Jason McCurdy says the dry conditions are the big reason the first 2 weeks have been without high readings.
Seems like the last few years, our spring, like May and June, were a bit wetter than we've been experiencing this year. So I think that's why in years past we've had, at least a couple of advisories each week the first few weeks of the season. Whereas this year it's been fairly dry, so we just haven't seen the bacteria getting carried in that runoff to the lake. So that's why we've been free of bacteria advisories up to this point.
Some areas of the state have seen a little rain at the end of the week, and that could change some water conditions.
The rain we just received will likely have some impact on water quality at the beaches. It was kind of a slower rain, so there wasn't a lot of runoff, but, I mean, I'm sure some of it got in there. So we just recommend that people take some extra precautions if they go swimming over the next couple of days. That includes avoiding swallowing lake water, showering as soon as possible after you go swimming, and just kind of washing your hands and things like that before eating anything.
Signs are posted on the beaches when high levels of bacteria are detected, but McCurdy says a lake of a warning sign doesn't mean the water is clear of the bacteria.
Take those hundreds of thousands of dollars.
And he said that it's not necessarily the time we collect the sample, that when the water quality conditions were like, conditions are extremely variable from hour to hour and day to day. So we always recommend, he says, that you take those precautions. You can find out more about calling the Beach Monitoring Hotline at area code 319-353-2613 or go to the DNR's website at iowadnr.gov. Water at state beaches is checked weekly by Memorial Day and Labor Day. And finally, in state news, swimmers and other people have returned to the George Wythe Lake Beach, which had been washed away in June of 2008. That beach opened last week, but a special ceremony is planned for this Monday evening. The Cedar River floodwater had swamped George Wythe Beach and damaged the restroom and concessions building. Lake sits on the north side of Waterloo. Contracted repair crews hauled in 1,000 tons of sand, raised a flood dike, paved a beach across the path for disabled people, and buried electrical lines. Taking a look at world headlines at this hour, scuffles broke out in an Egyptian courtroom today after verdicts were announced for former President Hosni Mubarak and his two sons. Mubarak got a life in prison term for complicity in the killing of protesters during last year's uprising. Mubarak's two sons were acquitted on corruption charges. Egypt's top prosecutor has ordered Mubarak transferred to a prison to begin serving his sentence. U.S. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta appears to be offering an olive branch to China and downplaying suggestions that America's new focus on the Asia-Pacific region is meant as a threat to Beijing. Speaking at a defense conference in Singapore, Panetta said the two world powers must learn to work better together for everyone's benefit. Fire authorities say the largest blaze in New Mexico's recorded history has burned through 340 square miles of forest and brush in the Gila National Forest, and about 15% of it is contained. Firefighters have conducted more burnout operations in an effort to corral the massive fire, which has shrouded parts of southwestern New Mexico in smoke. The neighborhood watch captain accused of shooting Trayvon Martin is being sent back to jail after a judge found that he and his wife lied about their finances in order to obtain a lower bail. A former prosecutor said that could present a problem at the trial of George Zimmerman, who will be depending on his credibility when he asks jurors to believe he killed in self-defense. Taking a look at our funeral announcements this morning, Bill Wolf, age 89, of Greenfield, died Wednesday in West Des Moines. Funeral and Masonic services for Bill Wolf will be today at 10 o'clock at the First Presbyterian Church in Greenfield. Steen Funeral Home in Greenfield has arrangements. Alan Burks, age 78, of Manila, died Tuesday at the Crawford County Hospital. Funeral services for Alan Burks will be today at 10:30 at the Church of Christ in Irwin. Odie Funeral Home in Manila has arrangements. Hazel Cushman, age 95, a former Grand River area teacher, died January 7th in McHenry, Illinois. A service in memory of Hazel Cushman will be held today at 11 o'clock at the Johnson Family Funeral Home in Dexter. Gerald Esslinger, age 85, of Bayard, died Monday at the Guthrie County Hospital. Graveside services for Gerald Esslinger will be today at 11 o'clock at the Highland Township Cemetery south of Bayard. Odie Funeral Home in Bayard has arrangements. Aletha Brew, age 86, of Harlan, died Sunday at the Elmcrest Retirement Community. Funeral services for Aletha Brew will be on Tuesday at 1 o'clock at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Harlan. Paulie Jones Funeral Home in Harlan has arrangements. Francis Jean Jeannie Carlson, age 59, of Atlantic, died Tuesday. Memorial services for Jeannie Carlson will be held on Tuesday at 2 o'clock at the Hockenberry Family Care Funeral Home in Atlantic. Nathan Tater Hutt, age 3, of Fontenelle, died Sunday. Funeral services for Nathan Hutt will be held this Tuesday at 3 o'clock at the Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Fontenelle. Steen Funeral Home in Fontenelle has arrangements. And Roland Raleigh Ackerman, age 97, formerly of the Atlantic and Griswold areas, died November 14th in Idaho. Memorial services for Raleigh Ackerman will be held on next Saturday at 11 o'clock at the Roland Funeral Home in Atlantic. That's a check of our news and funeral announcements. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.